Welcome back, everybody. Good to see you all. Okay, we were discussing the topic of Pshar. I wanted to discuss a couple more points on Pshar quickly, and then I want to discuss the Tosis about Mechila, Tzricha and Tzricha Kinyan, and Kinyan Sudar a little bit. So we'll do it in that order. So just to remind everybody, I think we read through the Gemara last time on Vav Amud Beis. Through Zion Amud Aleph, as far as I recall, to the two dots, is that right? That sound right? Yeah. Not the last year, because last year was on Inyane Pesach, but till the two dots, I think, is what we did.
That's what we did.
Yeah. Okay, good. So I want to talk about a few other things that we haven't yet spoken about. The bigger issue that we've been discussing is the nature of Pshara and how it fits together with Din. The English translation of Pshara is compromise, and we've been trying to assess, what that means in this context. And broadly speaking, we've been discussing whether or not it is a simulation of Din, but really is all about peace, and it's all about accommodating a more tranquil, solution. And probably a more harmonious future. If that's the case, then the simulation may still be responsible for certain, characteristics that parallel din, but basically it isn't a form of din, it's an abdication of din. Really what we're saying is that Yikov HaDin HaSahar, that there's something called din. Pshara is not an example or an application of that, but that Shalom, in some circumstances, is either preferred or acceptable. Again, there's one view in the Gemara here on Vav Amud Beis, which we discussed, Rabbi Elazar ben Osher, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who says that Osir Litzoa v'chala botzea reza chote, v'chala mevarech esa botzea reza menai, it's very harsh, v'alzen emar botzea berech nietz Hashem, ela yikov adin esahar. So that view, which is very, very not only pro din, but obviously has a very dim view of Pshara because it sees it as contradicting or contravening din, right? Sees these as in mutually exclusive terms. If you were to take the second view, which we've been identifying and supporting, the intriguing view, which is that Pshara is a form of din, but it's the flexibility afforded by extending this to two particular baledinim in a particular case, so you don't have to worry about the fallout and the consequences and the precedents and all the other low plug kind of issues, but really the din is being decided in accordance with the principles of the law, then it would be very hard to justify such a harsh response. You wouldn't see that as mutually exclusive to din. You wouldn't say Yikov HaDin HaSahar and anything else is kala, is a chote and kala mevare chareza, menaitz. That's a very, very strong view. But obviously, the perspective of Rabbi Elazar ben Osher, Rabbi Yossi Aglili has to be based on two assumptions. One is that Pshara is not din at all. It's not a form of din. It's an abdication of din. And number two, that abdicating din, even for the sake of peace, is not recommended, because the din is the ideal solution, and anything that compromises it is an unacceptable compromise. You could argue with Rabbi Elazar ben Osher, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, in one of two ways. You could say that he got Pshara wrong, and that's one of the things that we've been trying to explain, namely Pshara itself is a form of din, as we just discussed. A more flexible din, maybe even a more ideal din in some respects, and therefore there's no contradiction between it and din, there's no Yikov HaDin HaSahar to contend with. In Okanami, if it was viewed as something which was antagonistic to din, then we wouldn't be embracing it. We would maybe, join the bandwagon of saying, Areza Chote v'kala mevarech areza menayitz. But we just think that that's not what Pshara is. And that's what we mostly have been discussing. We've been seeing numerous indications back and forth whether Pshara is or is not a form of Din. There's, of course, another possibility, and that is that we have we embrace Pshara as an option, or maybe even as a preference, even if we do acknowledge that it's not Din. And that's because we don't see it as threatening to Din. We see a peaceful solution, a harmonious solution, as long as the parties are in agreement with this process, as something which is the equivalent of, or maybe even, you know, preferred to a Din solution. So that would be the other way to understand this machlokes. Again, the association of Aaron HaKohen with Pshara, you know, Shalom Vero, you know, Oiv Shalom, Rodev Shalom, Mesim Shalom, Minonim Lechavero, Torah Samus, Aisa Befiu, Avla, Lo Nimsa, Bespasa, Beshalom, Mishar Halach, E.T., the Rabim Heshiv Me'avon, if that is not just a statement of, you know, Shalom, but also of Pshara, obviously works in this direction too. So these are the basic issues that we've been discussing. We've seen numerous nafkamina. We've suggested that the language of Botseya as opposed to Pshara might be connected with this in either direction. The Rama is Tudeos, whether Botseya means Chote, and therefore Pshara is the positive, you know, perspective on this institution, and Botseya is the negative. Or his more dominant view, and the view also shared by others, like Tosa Rush and Meiri and others, is that on the contrary, Botseya means, you know, like Betzias Apas, you know, where you take a scalpel to it. In other words, you're carefully cutting, you know, the deal in a manner that is conducive, you know, to both parties. You're limiting the damage. You're, you know, increasing, you know, the benefits for everyone. That's a very precise kind of a judgment. Whereas Pshara has the, you know, tepid kind of connotation of being something that is acceptable, but there are nothing that anybody should be getting too excited about. In other words, it's you know, it's acceptable to do it, maybe even it's preferred to do it, but not because it's a more ideal application of Din, but because, you know, peace is a value worth sacrificing the ideal solution in some cases. So the linguistic connection is important. The question of makshinam pshara l'din when it comes to the number of dayanim, 3, 2, 1, the connection to Shmuel, Shnaim Shadanu Dineim Din, these are all connections that we have pursued. And the last thing that we were discussing, which we're going to get back to in a couple of minutes, was the question of kinyan. Do you need a kinyan in the case of Pshara? And if you do, what does the kinyan accomplish? And really there are, again, you know, broadly speaking, two perspectives on both of these questions. Number one, why would you need a kinyan in the case of Pshara? Why do you need to make a kinyan and to commit by means of a kinyan? You don't need to make a kinyan or to commit to the solution that is proposed in a regular Din Torah by regular Dayanim. So does the fact that there's a view, or is this debate about whether you need a kinyan for Pshara, another example of whether makshinim Pshara l'din? That's one perspective, and indeed that was the view of the Rama. Most of the Rishonim seem to be saying that if you really need, even if you need three dayanim, you still need a kinyan. And then the question is, so, you know, what gives, basically? Is this hischaibus and emma and shalom? Or is it the commitment to a certain process which requires a kinyan, right? But not because the kinyan relates to the outcome, meaning to the disbursement of the monies, but the kinyan is a kinyan to a process. So we're going to see that in Tosas. We began to see it last time. I want to get back to that in just a couple of minutes and pursue that idea, some variations of that, why that would be impactful to the type of kinyan that we use. So the question of kinyan tzorich or ain't tzorich, pshara tzorich or ain't tzorich kinyan is important, as is the next part of the Tosas, which we're going to discuss tonight as well, and that is, in general, whether mechila tzricha kinyan. Is mechila, is pshara mechila? Is the paradigm of mechila relevant to pshara? Mechila is when you waive your rights, right? You acquiesce, you know, to allowing someone, right, to ignore his obligation to you. So the relevance of mechila tzricha or lo tzricha kinyan surely is connected to how you understand pshara, right? Whether pshara can be mechila, or these are two totally different ideas and concepts, is something that we need to look at. Okay.
What's the linguistic derivation of yiko? What was it sure it should be? What does it mean? Yiko had dinner so or
bore hole.
That's what it means?
Yeah. If there's a mountain there, din, you know.
Okay.
You know, din knows no obstacle.
Okay.
Yikov ha-din is a har. So, okay. So I'll just wanted to mention a couple of other things before we get back to that, and that is the following. Number one, nemanus avadaya. Another interesting issue. The Gemara says in Masachet Kiddushin, in the fourth parak, parak Asar Yosin, that we discussed it some years ago, and we learned this about Metziah a little bit. There are certain individuals who have what we'll call special nemanus. Right? They are in a unique position. You know, sometimes they're the only ones who can know certain things. Moreover, there's a certain professional status that they have in terms of the function that they serve. For those and perhaps other reasons, overlapping reasons, right? We give them, we assign them a higher level of nemanus. So neman, let's say ha mocher lomar. That's a sugya in the beginning of a metziah that's also repeated in kiddushin. If somebody sells a property or an object, right, and there's a debate between two people who bought this object, so under certain conditions, at a certain point, neman ha mocher lomar lazeh macharti v'lazeh lo macharti. That's the gemara in the beginning of a metziah, right? V'lechsi zuze. Miman nokat. Why don't we just see who paid the money, who he got the money from? Anyways, so the Gemara at the end of Kiddushin and the Gemara Bab Metziah speak about the nemanus of the mocher under certain conditions, or nemenes hachaya. I think somebody just said that. Lomar ze yatzarishon, or ze lo yatzarishon. Let's say twins are born. Let's say, and the chaya, the midwife, right, has the the exclusive, on this one, and also again, there's a certain professional aspect to it as well, that to be believed that at least initially, right, which child is the bechor? So among those things that the Gemara lists in Kiddushin is Neman Adayin Lomar Lazeh Zachisi Vlazeh Lo Zachisi. Let's say there was a din Torah. And nobody knows for sure. Each one claims, yeah, we had that din Torah, and I was awarded, the decision. Like, how that could happen, why there were no records, I'm not sure exactly, but whatever it is, the dayan is given extra nemanus, right, that, to report, how he decided this particular case. I decided with Ruvein, not with Shimon. Does that apply in the case of Pshara? The special din of Nemanus Dayan, Lomar, Lazeh Zachisi, Lazeh Lo Zachisi, does that apply in Pshara or not? So the Gilyon and the Yad Ramah discusses this question, and the Meiri Alatar on the spot discusses this question as well. And they both seem to have two deos on this topic. Let's see if I think I have a copy of the Meiri here. Just 1 second. Yeah. Just 1 second. Yeah. It basically goes to the question of, the Gemara seems to say here that how can Pshara, maybe Pshara cannot be done by a single judge. The Gemara here in Vav Amud Aleph, the Gemara says maybe you need two, for the sake of Eidos, right? Everybody have the Gemara here in Bava Amud Aleph. The Gemara said, Lema Tlosit Tanoi, right? This is on Bava Amud Aleph, and this is 3, 6, 9, 10 lines up from the bottom of the page. The Gemara says, Lema Tlosit Tanoi. the pshara. Maybe there are three tanayim in pshara. The mar sava b'shlosha, mar sava b'shnayim, mar sava b'yachid. Three, two, and one. There's one who says you need three dayanim, one says you need, or pashranim, whatever you want to call them. Two or one, right? We don't want to, you know, stack the deck. Om rabacha b'rei dravika, v'tem rav yemar, bar shlamya, man domar trey, afilu chad nami. The one who says two, the one who says one, it's the same person. But you need two, right? Not for the din part, not for the dayan part of the pashranim part, but to serve as, you know, witnesses in terms of what happened here. So it's really, you can get away with one, but you're probably going to need two to serve this other function. So some of the Rishonim, the Gilyan and the Rama and the Meiri both ask the question, Balo Amru, Neman Adayim Lomar Lazezachisi, Velazechiavti, Alma Afilu Echad Nema. This is against the Gemara in Kedushin, because the Gemara in Kedushin says that a Dayan is believed as a Dayan, as an individual, without Eidos. Oh. So the Gemara says, so what's the answer? Kfar Amru Sham, Dafkik Shabali Dinim Omdim Lefanav. So the Meiri here gives two answers. First is that this special Nemanus, I hinted at it a moment ago. It doesn't last forever, right? It's limited, you know, to certain circumstances, and there's a certain timing, you know, element too. As long as the as their om the befana of the bali dinam are still standing in front of you, he's their naman. Once it's too late, and then the question arises anymore, it could be the shame dayon no longer exists. It's not just based on past history. It has to be still in present a factor. That's one answer. Now, that answer presupposes that the question is an acceptable question, namely that there's an equation between Nemanus Adayan and Nemanus when it comes to Pshara. But just like in Dayanim, right, this prerogative runs out. So by the same token, it runs out in the application to Pshar as well. But the second answer in the Meiri is quite interesting. O Shema Dafka Bedin Sheyachal Ahudia Tamo Shel Davar Aval Pashran Eino Neman Beyachid. Meaning, you can't equate a Dayan and a Pashran. So there are two ways one could take this. In the Gilyan of the Rama, he's not quite as explicit. He just kind of says that the Din, the special Din, that a Dayan is Neman, that is not applied in the case of Pshara. So in the Gilyan of the Rama, it's much easier to say that this is exactly the issue. In other words, if this special din of Nemanus is a din in Dayan and that professional capacity and so on, so then, you know, then it's not going to apply if you have a simulation, right, but it isn't really a Dayan, right? However, what the Meiri says is all equally intriguing, and that is that Dafka Bedin Sheyachal Odia Tamar Shel Davar Ava Pashron Eino Neman Biyachin. Why does he add the words Yachal Lahudia Tamo Shel Davar? So it sounds a little bit like either part of the Nemanus or part of the Shem Dayan is the fact that there is an objective, single, reconstructible solution in this case. What do I mean by that? Meaning, you're deciding the case according to this strict Yikov Hadin Sahar Halacha, right? And, you know, you're the one who made the decision. Presumably, it's not true that a person can never change their mind or develop a different perspective, but we're talking about, you know, within a certain time frame, you know, the case is the same, the Halacha is the same, the Dayan is the same. He should be able to reconstruct, you know, his thinking. But in the case of Pshara, is that true? Ah. So, if... I think there are two points to be made. Number one, if we're dealing with, you know, a motivation of harmony, you know, compromise, you know, for the sake of peace, as we noted when we talked about another issue, the need for unanimous decision by Dayanim, or, you know, you could have a vote as well. We noted that when it comes to Pshara, there may not be, especially the more you think of it in terms of peace, that's certainly true. It may be so even on the level of a non, low plug din, but certainly this is true in the case of Shalom, and that is that there's not a single solution. Right? There's, in theory, numerous solutions. And either way, the data isn't, you know, the facts and the halacha, you know, aren't the only things driving, you know, the conclusion. So the idea that to be able to be no same tam ledavar and therefore reconstruct, you know, what took place here, not so simple. Now the question is, if you view pshara not as shalom, but you view it as a form of din, based on the principles of din, albeit more flexibly, so what would you say about that? Is that something which is yakol lahodia tam shel davar? Or is that also something which is more instinctive and more subjective, given that it's not the single application, right, of the low plug objective laws, you know, to this case? Would you still apply this rule that, you know, dafke b'davar shiachal odia tam shel davar? In the opposite direction, let's say you could reconstruct the pshara, even if it was harmonious and peace-driven, but is part of the halacha of Ne'emanus HaDayan his professional capacity and his real stature and status as a Dayan? So this is a very intriguing issue, right, which tests, really, you know, both of these laws, both the Ne'emanus itself and the application and status of Pshara and Din. So that's something interesting to look at. Another issue is the issue of Lo Saguru. Right, the Gemara here itself on Bavmid Beis, as we read last time, discusses the halach of Lo Saguru Mipnei Ish, which is that a Dayan, not supposed to walk away from a Din Torah, right? You know, based on his worries or his concern. Maybe we'll speak about a little bit more about it next week when we wrap all this up. But you know, out of fear, he's not, or intimidation, he's not supposed to walk away from a court case. So that's certainly a din in din. It's in the parsha of din, shoftim. Is that applicable to dayanim who are involved in a pshara? Let's say they agree to do a pshara, right? And then they realize, you know, that the characters that they're dealing with are just that, they're characters, you know, that they're not pleasant people, that, you know, there are, you know, potentially adverse consequences, and, you know, they regret ever having, you know, entered into this vulnerable position. But do we apply the, whatever that is, I mean, we still have to analyze what the conditions of Lo Saguru Mipnei Ish are. There's an interesting range of views in the Rishonim, and even more in the Poskim, especially the, you know, 16th century Poskim. The Bach is very interesting on this, the Ramah. Apparently a lot was going on, you know, in that particular era. I guess it is in every era. But again, do we automatically apply Lo Saguru Mipnei Ish, which is certainly in the context, set in the context of Dayanim? Is it limited to Dayanim, or is it any time that religious principle, let's say, is measured or tested, you know, against external and human, you know, social or other pressures, right? So maybe it appears in the parsha of Shoftim, in the parsha of Judges, and it certainly applies to Judges. I mean, the Rambam quotes it in Perek Chav Beis of Hilchos Sanhedrin, but maybe that's the most obvious example of it. Maybe any time, you know, people are involved in doing Melechas Shamayim of one sort or another, that, you know, being intimidated, you know, at a certain point is kind of a Chilul Hashem, you know, kind of, you know, hints at the primacy of Yiras HaAdam beyond the Yiras HaAlokim, which is certainly the way that Lo Saguru Mipnei Ish was understood by some Rishonim, Rabbi Yonah, and maybe we'll talk about it next week. But if you think that this is a din in Dayan in particular, that there's this added element in Dayan, which many Rishonim also seem to think, the protection of a Dayan, the responsibility of a Dayan, there's some who quote Shoftim Shoftim Titen Lecha Bechal Sharecha, and the role of Dayanim in the community, which is our first topic of the year. But, you know, if the Dayanim are playing that kind of a role, so, you know, they, even more than other, you know, people, you know, doing the Rabbanu Sholem Shlichus, you know, can ill afford to, you know, to succumb to pressures, right? That just makes a mockery of their contribution. So if it's really a din and dayan, will it apply also to pashranim? That's an interesting issue, an interesting question that some of the posts can deal with. What about ben Noach? That's another question. So we are familiar with the Gemara later on, where the Gemara says, we have it here in our, in the Gemara, if you want to look at it, on our two Gemaras, in the Vav Amud Beis, and then again in Zayin Amud Beis, but also we have it here in the Mar Makomos that we used last time, not the last year, but the one before, right, the famous Gemara that we read earlier in the year, where the Gemara says that dinin, b'nei Noach have dinin, right? But we also know that even though b'nei Noach have dinin, there are certain characteristic differences between the dinim of b'nei Noach and dinei Yisrael, right? So the Gemara here, on, if you look on page 2 of the last copies that we have, starting from line 4, line 1, the Gemara says, Minani Mili, or how do you know the dinim of B'nai Noach? Or Amar B'yochan, Damar Kro, it's in the Gemara. Vayitzav Hashem Elokim al Adam, Leimor Mikol Eitz Hagan Achol Tochal, Vayitzav Elo Adinim, B'chein Omer Ki Yedativ, Luman Asher Yitzavez, Banav, and so on. That's the Gemara, so that's dinim of B'nai Noach. So then the Gemara says that dinim B'nai Noach, if good, the Gemara challenges this later on. On you know, later down the page, is it really true that B'nai Noach were obligated with dinim? But Tanya, Eser mitzvos and Sav Yisrael b'mara, 10 mitzvos were commanded to Klal Yisrael in Mara, right? Sheva shekibba aleim B'nai Noach, 7 B'nai Noach, v'osif aleim, and then they added dinim, Shabbos, and kibbut ava'im. There are different lists, Rashi, of course, different lists in the Perush al Torah, whatever. So the Gemara says, Dinim, Dixiv, Sham, Sam, Lo, right? Choku Mishpat, Shabbos, Vikibude, Abeim, Dixiv, Kasher Tziv, Rashav, Lo, Kecha. Right? Om Rav Yudah, Kasher Tziv, Chabamara. So, it implies that Dinim was one of the Hosafos beyond the seven. So you have seven, you had ten, the other plus three. One of the three is Dinim. Obviously, Dinim isn't one of the seven, right? So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Baravua, Lo Nitzcha Le'eda Ve'edim V'Hasra. No, there are, what we meant was, even though there are dinim of B'nai Noach, there are specific elements of Dinei Yisrael that were given already B'mara that do not apply to B'nai Noach, and in that sense it was a Hosafa. What are those things? The Gemara says originally, Eda Ve'edim V'Hasra. Okay? So that means how many judges do you require? How many witnesses do you require? Right? We require three judges. We require two witnesses. And we also require Hasra for Malkus and for Misa. Right? You have to give a warning. And B'nai Noach, right, they don't have the requirement of three judges. They don't have the requirement of two Edim. You can get away with one and one, probably. And there's no din. There's no requirement of Hasra. Azarasam, Zuhi, Misasam. They don't need an additional Hasra, which is interesting. Something to talk about later if we get a chance. So the Gemara says, Yahachim ayo sifa aleim dinim. Elamar Rabba lo nitzcha l'dine knasos. Right? Because those aren't dinim. Dinim means a category of law. Those are just, you know, pratim. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Akati vasifa bid dinim mi boile. Then the Gemara says, if good, that's a Rashi table. Basically, the Gemara is going back and forth trying to figure out what was added to the dinim of B'nai Noach, right, that justifies there being dinim and also there being a hosafa in mar. Good. So, in the context of all that and the discussion of knossos and so on, so some of the Rishonim weigh in on the question of pshara. There's also Gemara in Zayin Amud Beis, which seems to say that there's a difference between Bnei Noach and Yisrael regarding tzedakah. So those are two Gemaras that need to be squared, or the interpretation of two Gemaras. The result of that is, this is what I'm trying to bring out, that there seems to be a debate whether or not Pshara is included in Din for Bnei Noach as well as for Yisrael, or that's one of the differences. So Rashi here in Sanhedrin and Van Bnei says, Dine Knasas, Hosifa Bamara, Dibnei, this is line 13, Dibnei Noach lo huzar aleim, Dixiv Vayitza, right, Vigamrin Allah, Miyashar Yitzaveh, the Hasam Tzdaka Umishbat Ksiv. What is Tzdaka Umishbat that applies also to Bnei Noach? The Hainu Din U Pshara, as opposed to Abel, that's to explain the Gemara, Abel Knasos Lav Mishbat Ninu, to Katsina Leitzveh Midinei. A knas is a penalty, and by definition, that's more than the amount that is warranted by the infraction, right? You stole an object, so you should pay, right, the keren, give back the object, or pay the value of the object. Paying double, right, or if you sell it, paying dalet v'hei, that's well beyond that. That's called a knas. So what Rashi is trying to explain is that Bnei Noach don't have this supererogatory thing that, they're going to pay kefel or dalet v'hei or other knasos beyond what's warranted. But they do have the basic, quid pro quo kind of things, and included in that is that they have din and they have pshara. So it seems like the concept of pshara applies to Bnei Noach as well. The Adrama has two deos. One is Vayitzave Lavadinim V'cheinu Omer Laman Asher Yitzave V'dinim Ksivi Hasam the Sivlaso Tzedaka Mishpat V'hainu Tamid L'choshim Nami Tzedaka V'shim Da'ach Tzedaka Dumi De Mishpat V'hainu Pshara Kach Tashina V'pirka Kama Gabe Hanach Kroy. Okay. So basically, once again, like Rashi, he seems to equate Pshara with Mishpat. But then there's another day in his view on Nunzayin Amid Beis. Ist Amri, the high tzedaka pshara hi, kinarminan, vahi David osa tzedaka mishpat, umistabar li le tzedaka mamish kaamar, vahi de lachoshiv lo gabi mitzvah, mishun de mitzvah sasei hi. So according to the second view, it seems like tzedaka does not include pshara, but tzedaka is tzedaka. That's something that applies to Bnei Noach. But Pshara maybe doesn't apply to Bnei Noach. And this is even more explicit in some of the Kiddush Aran and Biri. So there seems to be a debate whether or not Pshara is included in Dinin of Bnei Noach or not. Okay? So again, there are two ways to look at this. Generally speaking, our default view has been that our default view has been that the more pshara fits in with din, the more it's likely to be a form of din. And that certainly makes sense. And therefore, if pshara is something totally different, then it doesn't follow that it's included in dinin of Bnei Noach, just because din is included in dinin of Bnei Noach. On the other hand, it's important to consider that even if Pshara is a part of Din for Yisrael, it's still possible that Pshara is not part of the Din of Bnei Noach. For the same reason that Dine Knossos, and that Eda, and Edim, and Hasra, and the Gemara originally thought, and maybe even is partially true Lamaskana, depending on the Gersa in our discussion earlier in the year, that there might be a difference in the obligation of Kopelach, the Chalir Beir, right? According to some Rishonim, the obligation for Ben Noach is limited to Kopelech and Pelech, doesn't apply to Kol Yir V'Yir, whereas for Yisrael it's Kopelech and Pelech and Kol Yir V'Yir. Now the reason this is important is, what I'm really trying to say is, that the idea that Bnei Noach have basic dinin is very clear, and it's also very compelling, because we care about non-Jewish society, and we need it to be stable, and we want it to be fair and just in broader strokes, and therefore there's a dinim of Bnei Noach. Right? But the idea that you know, we're going to bend over backwards, you know, when it comes to how many dayanim and how many edim, and to give hasra sometimes, even at the cost of a more efficient legal system, because you would start, you know, warning people, you know, or you insist on the standard of hasra, you're going to end up losing a lot of convictions, right? So you're going to compromise a little bit, ubiarta hara mikirbecha, right? The deterrent and the stability aspect of society, because you're protecting, you know, the civil rights, if you will, of individuals. It's like our old, very old debates, right? Didn't start with, you know, with the Democrats and the Republicans, or in every society, you really have to weigh, right, law and order and cohesion, you know, and stability against, you know, the potential of making, you know, terrible, irrevocable errors that, you know, impinge on the, you know, inalienable rights of your citizens. So, but the point is that Eda v'Edim v'Hasra, or Kopala Kopala, Kalir v'Ir, all these dinim which are beyond, right, the, you know, the core stability, you know, factor, and that go to the concept of law as transcendent, just to use the language, you know, that we've talked about several times, you know, the Gemara in Brachos about Shalom and Torah, right? When you're going beyond Shalom into Torah, then that doesn't necessarily carry over to Bnei Noach. Just like in other areas where there are dinim of Bnei Noach, there are differences, right? When it comes to Arayos, there are Arayos from Bnei Noach, but they're far more extensive when it comes to Israel. Even Avraham and Achai, there are differences. In every Gneva and Gezela, of course, there are differences. So it's possible that even if Pshara is a form of din, as we've been discussing, because it is a specialized form of din, and one which is particularly suited for, you know, the kind of role that din occupies in Jewish life consistently, it's quite possible that it doesn't carry over into the life of Binah. But that too is an interesting argument, an interesting debate. Okay. So now let's go back and discuss the problem of Kenyan. Everybody so far following? Okay, good. So let's talk about Kenyan now. So the Gemara says about Kenyan, right, Om Ravashi, Shema Minah, Pshara Ein Tzricha Kenyan. These are the five lines or six lines before the end of the Amud on Vav Amud Aleph. Right, Shema Minah, Pshara Ein Tzricha Kenyan. Yisol Kedai Tzricha Kenyan, because if it did need a Kenyan, Laman Domar Tzricha Tlasa, Lamali Tisagi Betrei Velikni Minei. So basically, the Gemara starts off by saying that the requirement of three dayanim and a kinyan, right, is mutually exclusive. If you need a kinyan, you shouldn't need three dayanim. It should be enough to have two. And then the Gemara, however, seems to turn its back on this idea and says, v'hilchasa pshara tzricha kinyan. In fact, you do need a kinyan when it comes to pshara. So we already read the view of the Yad Ramah, which we had here. If you look on the bottom of page 1, right, starting from line 33, 34, Vimlach Shaklomad Rameir, Deboi Gimel, Demakish Pshara Ladin, Loboi Kinyan. The simple reading of the Gemara, and that's how Rashi read it, and most Rishonim read it, is the Gemara originally thought that there was an incompatibility between Pshara Tzricha Kinyan and Gimel Dayanim, and the Gemara's conclusion is that they are compatible, and that's how Rashi reads it. Pshar Tzricha Kinyan, Rashi says, the last Rashi on the page, Hilchasa Pshar Tzricha Kinyan, Afilu Nasis Bishlosha. And the Ramah also had that view, the first view, but his second view is Vim Nas Shechlomar Drameir Deboi Gimel Demakish Pshar Ladin, according to Rameir, who says you need three Dayanim for a Pshar, Loboi Kinyan, you don't need a Kinyan, the Dayan Loboi Kinyan. After all, a judge doesn't need a Kinyan. So what's the Ramah saying? If you need three, it's because makshinim pshar l'din. It's a form of din. If it's a form of din, you don't need kinyan. Yam telahachi by gimel kidukya dravashi brabana the sagul and bechad sfirled pshar tzvicha kinyan machad alo makshinim pshar l'din v'chibo chad v'chatchilo debo and so on. It's only if you think that you can get away with one or two dayanim because you don't really think it's a form of din, so then you need the kinyan. That's the second view of the Ramah. Okay. However, according to the Rishonim, the majority view, who read like Rashi, and the first day of the Ramah, so what gives? The question is, how do we explain the compatibility of kinyan and three dayanim? Right. So there are two possibilities, as we've discussed. One is that, you may need three dayanim, but that is just misleading. Really, it isn't a form of din, it's a form of shalom. But it's simulated, by the trappings of din. So you need three, but it isn't a din, and they're not really dayanim. And therefore you need a kinyan, like any other hischaibus. That's one interpretation. And according to that view, this requirement of a kinyan is very much, at least technically, in the parsha of Mechila Tzricha Kinyan or Ein Tzricha Kinyan, because somebody is waving away their rights here, in a very fundamental way, if Pshara isn't really a form of din. Meaning, according to Yikov Adin Sahar, Ruvain is Zocha and Shimon is Chayiv. Right? So when we decide on a compromise, and Ruvain has to give up, some of his 100% deserved victory, right? Especially, if it's coming to him, so in a way he's being mochel, right? And therefore, if you look at it that way, then this is part of the topic of mechila tzricha kinyan or mechila ein tzricha kinyan. In kol hashas, right? This is a question that comes up a number of times when you wave away your rights, when you give up, something that is coming to you. Do you need a kinyan for that or not? We'll discuss why in a moment. That should be different. Normally, in order to transfer something that you don't own or something that you're entitled to, normally you do need a kinyan. But maybe mechila, right, where there's no physical transfer, it's more like not pursuing a right of collection, or maybe even in cases where there is a physical object, but there's no need to transfer it for whatever reasons, or we'll discuss all these. There's an inherent seriousness, and therefore there's, no need for kinyan, because you're kind of giving up a right rather than, simply bequeathing a matana. So, whatever reason, if you hold that way, mechila in tricha kinyan, so then it's certainly appropriate, right? It's good form to be asking the question here, well, maybe pshara shouldn't need a kinyan, because pshara is really a form of ischaibus, in half of that might be mechila, meaning from one side, and therefore, why do you need a kinyan from that point of view? And indeed, the whole thrust of the Bali Tosis goes in that direction. Tosis starts off by saying, Tzricha kinyan.
How did the transfer work? Are the kinyans between the Bali dinim?
Well, the each baldin makes a kinyan. Well, or with the dayan,
the base din, or with each other.
So, it might depend on exactly what the kinyan is. But if it's the giving up of a right, then it's with each other.
With each other. So, yeah.
But it could be also that each one is making a kinyan, and with the dayan that he, the dayan is acting on behalf of the other party, so, just like the rabbi, when he's Masada Kedushin at the wedding, so he acts on behalf of the other, the other party.
The rabbi is acting on behalf of the other party?
Well, in the case of the ksuva, when the chosan is Mekabel Kinyan, right, he's really being Mischayev to the kala.
The chosan to the kala.
Not to the rabbi.
The chosan to the kala.
In the ksuva.
Yeah.
But the rabbi, is
the shliach for the kala?
Yeah, that's it's a kind of a zochen, right?
And she wasn't a man of the rabbi.
What?
She wasn't the mom.
Right, that's Zachin. Zachin Lom Shalom Pana.
Oh, I see.
The Kanina is a Kenyan. But I mean, the rabbi has nothing to do with it. I mean, you know. Right? I mean, he has a lot to do with a lot, but not the money in the Ksuba. Right? So, yeah. So, yeah. So Tosa says here, im nefarish, the kinyan shel pshara osim kodem apshara. Tosas discusses these two questions, and then he has a third issue he discusses as well. But the first question he's discussing, when is this kinyan made? Right? Is this kinyan made before the settlement is known? In the beginning of the process, in other words, where the commitment is being made to the process, or after the settlement has already, you know, been defined, and then we're asking the Bali Dinim or you know, to sign off on the compromise. So Tosa says, if we interpret that the kinyan of the Pshara is made before the Pshara, I mean before the settlement is known, or even pursued, the konim ze mizeh lasos kemoshe yomru hadayanim, and each one is kona from each other to follow the instructions, to follow the conclusion of the dayanim. Right, hein l'shalem, hein l'mchol. Whether it is, depending on, you know, the perspective of who really would have been zocher, right? So whether we're dealing with, you know, to pay out or to, you know, to be mochel, to drop, you know, the pursuit of this right that he has. So hein l'daktek mikan, the ba'alma mechila tzricha kinyan. So these are, you have to know what's going on here, right? Like in everything else. So Tosa, then, if this, you know, is done early, you know, at this early stage, then we're not going to be troubled about the fact that this requirement for Kinyan would seem to, you know, challenge the normal rule. Tosa thinks it's the normal rule, that Mechila Eina Tzricha Kinyan. The Masha Tzorech Hacha Kinyan Ala Mechila Mishum Di'ilav Hava Kinyan Have a kemo mechila betos shelo yodea sheyomru limchol kolkach. Since the mechila is being done at this early stage, when the details are unknown, right? So what you might say is that without a kinyan, it isn't a typical in a typical mechila. Like, you know, it's, I lent you $100, right? So I'm mochel the collection of this $100. I know exactly what I'm being mochel. I know what the schum, I know what the amount is, right? But in the case of this particular pshara, it is, Tosa says, at least on one side, a mechila, and if the conclusion in Shas is that mechila ain't tzricha kinyan, so why do you need it here? The answer is, because here, since you're making the kinyan earlier, before we know the details, so without a kinyan, I might say, you know, ta'isi. As I thought this was going to be $10, you know, these Pashranim Dayanim, you know, came up with $50 or $200, right? Since I don't know what I'm getting into, therefore I need a Kinyan, even though typically in a Mechila where I do know what I'm getting into, I don't need a Kinyan. In other words, Tosis is basically asking two questions. A, when is this Kinyan made? B, what is the relationship to Mechila? Ain't tzricha kinyan and kol ha'tarah kula. What he's saying is, it seems here like you make the kinyan early, and that'll solve the problem why this is not in conformity with the sugya of mechila generally, right? That's what Tosa is doing. The afagav the hashad the ika kinyan havekam kinyan betos. Tosa says, well, maybe if you want to be stubborn about it, you could say that a kinyan isn't enough because he doesn't know the amount. So even the kinyan is betos. Never mind the mechila is betos. Now it's mechila bekinyan betos. Right? So Tosa says, Miu, however, Alima Milsa Tve Bekinyan, be below Kinyan. By strengthening the level of Ischaivus, you overcome the lack of specific knowledge. We think that puts you over the top. You know, by making a Kinyan, it's also Mechila, so that, you know, overcompensates for not knowing the amount. The Afilum Nefaresh, Tosa says, and let's say, it doesn't seem likely, but let's say the kinyan is after the pshara. So then it really makes more acute the problem of why you need a kinyan if in Shas we conclude that Mechila ain't Shrich a kinyan, because now he even knows the amount. Still, Tosa says, I can get out of it. Akati ain't Raya Mikan. It's still not going to be a proof from here against the normal rule of Mechila ain't Shrich a kinyan. Why? The Matzilam Eimar, the kinyan al also, Sheyeshlo, La'acher Lifroa, Abel Hay the Machil, ain't Sarach kinyan. Maybe what we mean is that the person who has to actually pay out, he needs to make a kinyan. We don't mean that a person whose mochel, his right of collection, has to make a kinyan. We meant only one of the parties. Doesn't sound that way, but maybe that's what we mean. Miu balachas gedolos, in very early rabbinic work, right, the halachas gedolos, pirsh balachos, pilchas dinim, the tzarech kinyan ala mechila, that even the mochel has to make a kinyan, apal pi, she'osam a kinyan, achar pshara. Says, well, that's not going to work for the Bahag, because we know that he thinks that the kinyan is later, once we know the details. And we also know that he thinks that even the mochel, never mind the mishalim, has to make a kinyan. So now we really are in a pickle, because we really have a contradiction, just one more second, to the concept of mechila ain't tzarech kinyan. Unless the Bahag thinks that mechila in general is tzarech kinyan, but that doesn't seem likely. So Tosa says, no, I still think we can explain this. We still shouldn't extrapolate from here. More generally, the mechila she'ayidei pshara afapi she'odea ma mochel doma lemechila betos levisha mochel alpi atzasam shal dayanim she'isiu oso limcho lefik achzorech la'alam adavar ayidei kinyan. Tosa says there's still a difference. The difference is that typically, when you talk about mechila, right, and mechila is ein tzricha kinyan, it's voluntary. It's his initiative, right? There's no pressure. Basically, there's nobody telling me not to collect the loan that he owes me. That's my decision. And therefore, mechila ein tzricha kinyan. But in this case, even if the kinyan is made, and even if it's made once we know the details, so the amount is not subject to tos, but there still is pressure. Meaning you got these dayanim together, right? You told them that you're going to follow them. So, you know, when they come up with this compromise, it's very, the momentum to follow it is great. And therefore, maybe that, you know, in a way, neutralizes the level of your actual will to follow it. And therefore, la'alim, in order to strengthen the commitment, you need a stronger commitment to go along with, you know, the pressure of their suggestion, right? Even though we know exactly what the contours of what he's agreeing to are. So basically, Tosus, in three different ways, right, the common denominator of all three, namely, either we're talking about an early kinyan, right? Or we're talking about a kinyan made only by the mishalem, the person who actually digs into his pocket or his bank account and pays out. Not the person who is, you know, relinquishing his claim, right, and waiving his right of collection. That's number two. Or number three, even if we're talking about a later kinyan, even if we're talking about the mochel, this is still not anything that challenges the typical law of mechila, ein tzricha kinyan. In all these cases, Moses is hewing to the line that we're dealing with something that is a typical case of mechila. Why does Moses hold that? Because it seems like they hold, at least here, that pshara is a schaivus. It's a kind of matana. That's the reason that it requires a kinyan, right? If it's a little bit atypical, it's for the adjustment for certain technical differences, the pressure of the dayan, lack of knowledge of the contours, and so on. But Tosfos is basically treating this as mechilas mamon in a very typical fashion. Yeah, good question.
If they make the kinyan before the shara, yeah, and the shara actually comes out, isn't it a classic piece of ware?
Well, not really, because it, you know, what happens later, I mean, it's a good question. But Brera is a very tricky concept. And mostly, you know, we apply Brera to things that kind of manifest in an unpredictable way. Things that depend on, you know, I'm basically investing reliance, right, in these people and in their expertise or in their moral, you know, judgment, right? And I just don't know what that is right now, but that's not arbitrary. That's usually not Brera. I mean, there are rules of Brera. What differentiates Brera, a Tanai, and an Asmachta? Tola bedas acherim, tola bedas atzmo. There are all sorts of rules. But anything that is, you know, not a coincidence or not arbitrary, anything that is predictable or that is rooted in decisions that are made in a more objective, by saying what I'm saying, I'm not contradicting what I said before, which is that maybe in Peshawar there could be more than one solution. But what I am saying is that the solution here is not arbitrary. It's dependent upon, you know, the judgment of these people, which you're following for, you know, their reputation and so on. And they aren't just, you know, it's not a whim for them. It's not, you know, what happens to unfold. It's basically you're saying, I sign on to the just solution that they will come up with. You know, and even though I don't know the details of that until later, you know, it's not Brera. It's a good question, but it's different for that reason. Okay, that's what Tosas says. Then Tosas goes on, you know, having kind of, you know, began this whole discussion by assuming that Mechila Eina Tzricha Kinyan, you know, so you can ask the Balei Tosas, like, Mechitesi, like, how do you know that? So the next part of the Tosas, the next third of the Tosas, let's say, the first third of the Tosas is to try to show you that Pshara, Tzricha Kinyan, is not out of sync with Mechila Ein Tzricha Kinyan. Right? And that reflects a certain perspective on what Pshara is. Certainly the more you think of Pshara as Din rather than as Chayvus, you just say, I don't have to get into this whole topic. Mechila, Tzricha, Rein, Tzricha, Kinyan is about money. Pshara is not about money. Pshara is about a perspective on din. It's about signing on instead of din A to din B. So all I'm trying to show is the very discussion of Tosas and the three, you know, ways that he tries to maintain the equation, right, with Mechila, Ein Tzricha Kinyan, highlight that he's not, in this Tosas at least, operating with the notion of Pshara as a form of din, really, but a simulation of din that is really a kind of matana or eschaivus or mechila, etc. But how does he know that mechila Ein Tzricha Kinyan? So that is the next third of Tosas, where Tosas says the following, B'nir la viraya, the mechila Ein Tzricha Kinyan. By the way, in other words, this assumption that we've been making is rooted in other evidence. They had Amar Perakam Kabel. Gemara speaks about Gabi Sachir, right? Imcho Eitzel Chenvani, Eitzel Shulchani. Ain't over a love. Upligi Hashem Rav Sheshes Amar Ain't a Choser, right? Rav Amar Choser. The Mashma De Below Kinyan Iri is a case of Mechila. Again, the details are not important for the moment. And in that case, it sounds like there is no Kinyan in that Mechila. The Ibe Kinyan by Taima De Man Damar Choser. How can you be chozer if there's a kinyan? Ava below kinyan, pligi, bahachi, that there can be this argument. Mar savar kishimcho lo legamri patro lebalabayas, shulei atzer alav, mar savar legamri patro, alma mechila lo tzricha kinyan. Okay, that, the details of that proof isn't germane to our discussion tonight, but I'm just trying to show you that Tosas is trying to prove this from other cases in Shas. Ode Raya, this is more important. The parach mekar perkam the kiddushin, Gabin every Evid Ivri Kona Atzmo Bishtar. The Gemara says that an Evid Ivri can acquire himself with a shtar. The Gemara says, Lamale shtar, Lamale be'api trei zil. Why do you need to be Meshachar or an Evid with a shtar, with a contract, right? Shtar Shichur Evid Ivri. Why do you need that? The Odon should be able to say to the Eved, Zil, right? Just go, meaning you're no longer under my control, right? Ubelo Kinyanairi, you know, when he said the idea that he would say to him, Zil, you know, is talking about a case where he just gives up his right for the Eved to be his servant. There's no Kinyan. And Diba Kinyan, by Nishani, right? Eved Ivri Gufo Konui. So, Akati Tikshlo Shtar Lamali Yaf Girenu. The Gemara there says that Eved Ivri is Gufo Konui, and that's the reason that the Eved Ivri isn't just working for the Adon, but he really belongs to the Adon, is Gufo is Konui. And that's the reason why you can't say to him, Zil, you know, just go. Okay. Anyways, this would get you involved with all sorts of other issues. Shtar Lamali Yafkirenu, right? If there was really a Kenyan, then maybe Hefker would work. Ushmul Dama Mafka of the Yetel Cherus, Vainzorch get Shichror. So Ela Korchach Loparach Ela Biloshon Akosa Bishtar, Klamar Lamali Shtar Osa Loshon, right? Atzmo Shakosa Bishtar, Ariat Atzmech Yomer Lo Bal Peh. Use the language of the Shtar without the written contract and just say Zil, right? Go. So we see from there that even though that there is no Kenyan, if it, not for the fact that Eved Ivri wasn't Gufa, if Eved Ivri was not Gufa Kanu, you could be Mochel, the services of the Eved Ivri, without a Kenyan, so Yechi Mechila, Eina Tzricha Kenyan. That's Tosa's proof. Od Raya, Mehodetan Besofa Nose, Gemara Yang Suvis, Shimshasa Chafe Shanim, Velotavak Suvasa, if a woman waits for 25 years and she never demands the ksuva from her husband after divorce. In other words, it's a divorce or a death. And we're talking about the estate. She never demands her ksuva. So, mistama machla. So, we assume that, you know, after 25 years, she is waiving her rights. Okay? So, ubalo kinyan, airi, kinabucham yubda, the chamse. Basically, from the Gemara there, it's pretty clear that we're not talking about a situation where there was no Kenyan, and yet there can be Mechila, Bali Kenyan. So from these various Gemaras, we see that Mechila, Eina, Tzricha, Kenyan. Or, another example, another proof, Tanu Chitin Vahodalo B'Saorim. The Gemara says that if Reuven says to Shimon, you owe me a Chitim, and Shimon answers Reuven, you know, I owe you Saorim, right? The Pater Af Mi Saorim. So, since he didn't ask him for Saorim, the fact that he was Moda B'Saorim doesn't matter. It's a kind of a Mechila. The Moda Hava Behu, right? That Tosa says Ein Raya. Tosa Malkar Chaklam Shum Da Omri Midalotava Lehu Stama Chlinu. Have a potter. Elad ha'inatama midalotava saorim modu delo makayev saorim. Mid the parach alav b'sof ameniach v'hodetana yu hanizakin shnayim v'hanizak omer gadol hizik as a gadol mazik omer loki elakatan hizik as a gadol gadol hizik as a katan mazik tafilu kida omer mazik leislay v'hasam yafshelios atam klav v'shem v'chila shari omed v'tzavach and so on. And then basically the Tosa says the raya from Tanu Chitin Behoda B'Saorim isn't really a good proof because the Gemara links that to other issues, and in those cases, it's not a case of Mechila, it's not a case where they're arguing about it. Yeah?
So, what is the rationale for saying that you don't need a Kenyan?
In Mechila.
For Mechila as opposed to, and you have the same effect as a conveyance.
As a Kenyan, regular Kenyan. So, I want to get.
Where you do need a.
Yeah, 100%. That's what I'm going to get at. In just 30 more seconds. And then the Gemara has another case, Umbechor, Shemnot al Chelek, Kepashut, Omer Viter, Eladak Teknami, Klal, from a case of a Bechor who seems to be giving up his rights as a Bechor. There isn't such a Raya either. Basically, there are some cases that prove it and some cases that don't. So now, let's talk about your question. So, why? So, basically, Tosis's view, as you can see, and this is Tosa's view throughout Shas and in Kiddushin about Metzia and other places, is that Mechila Eina Tzricha Kenyan. Right? That's Tosa's view. So the question you're asking, which is very legitimate, is, like, why? Typically, to commit, right, in a manner that you cannot be a choza, that you can't recant, that you can't reverse, you do require a kinyan. Why should mechila be any different? Okay. So I think that, generally speaking, there are three approaches to this. One is, and you know, the three are really two. There are more than three, and there's also basically two. Let me explain what I mean by that. The first is, I will call it three. The first is that the reason that mechila in tzricha kinyan is because mechila itself kind of provides or constitutes a kind of a case where kinyan is generally unnecessary. Meaning, mechila, right, is kind of a kinyan in its own way. The Rishonim sometimes call this, you know, that mechila is keomer hiskabalti, right? When you're mochel something, instead of seeing it as waiving your rights, you know, we might legally perceive it as the equivalent of, you know, kind of a fiction that you received. Like, I'll take the case that we talked about before, which is one of the easiest cases. You owe me $100, and I have the right to collect, right? But milva's also lo tzanit, no? Meaning, there's no be'en. So basically, you know, when I say I'm mochel, instead of looking at it as really waiving my rights, what you could say is it's tantamount to having received the $100. I treat it as if I received $100. Okay, that's called ki'ilu iskabalti. The Rajba says something very similar about a tanai. Let's say I make a deal, a condition, you know, a proviso is attached to the deal, then I want to drop the proviso, the tanai. We talked about this last year, learned suvis last year, talked about the issue of, you know, onus b'tanai, right? And, you know, whether tanai is milsakriti or not. I mentioned the position of the Rajba as opposed to the Rosh and others. Rajba in Ksuvah, Tafayin Gimel, who says that, you know, Mechila is Ki'ilu Hiskabalti. When I drop the proviso or the condition, you know, legally, it's like a fiction. Legally, what's really happening is I'm saying I treat it as if the condition was fulfilled. Now you might ask, why does that work? Well, that's a kind of a legal fiction. That's called ki'ilu iskabalti. So I could say the same thing, perhaps. Some people do say the same thing about mob. Now, that's a little bit... The perception is that mechila in tzricha kinyan. What we're really saying is, it's like you received $100 for, right? So it's misleading. There's no fundamental difference between mechila and any other kinyan, except that here, when I drop the requirement, there's a ki'ilu iskabalti aspect. Another form of this idea, which, you know, is both less ambitious but also less ubiquitous, is to say that mechila in some cases is the equivalent of a kinyan. For example, let's say my object is in your possession, right? So when I'm mochel, instead of saying you don't need a kinyan, or instead of saying it's ki'ilu, you know, hiskabalti, I you know, treat it as if I receive the object that you owe me, the $100 or the whatever it is. Another way to look at it is, I drop my claim, and by dropping my claim, your kinyan chatzer, if you will, or in a case where, you know, the Bala Itur uses the expression, mechila lo gora, right, mimeshicha, or ein lecha, you know, meshicha gedola mizu. So basically what we're really saying is not that mechila doesn't need a kinyan, but a mechila, right, either a kilu is kabalti, or this is all part of the same perspective, even though there are differences. It's like if either the kinyan chatzer, the fact that it's in your possession, but it would have to then really be in your possession, right? Or it's a kind of equivalent of a meshicha. Okay? Bala Itur says this, the... Tur has such a line. about, you know, chatzer. We find different mefarshim, you know, say this, right, in different ways. The Tur in Siman Ayin Gimel, Sif Katan Lamed Beis, has a line of kipiron, like ki'ilu iskabalti. The Bala Itzur has the line, which I'll read to you. You don't have it, but I'll try to get it maybe for next week, of Meshicha. He says, Mechila ein tzricha kinyan, delo michsura Meshicha. Meaning it's already in your possession, whatever it is, right? Since it doesn't need to change hands, so it's like this is a Meshicha. Another way to say this, a little bit more, let's say, demanding way to say this, more of a chiddush, might be to say that the requirement of kinyan, to begin with, which is what you're asking me, why doesn't the typical requirement of a kinyan apply here? So far I've said, well, it really does, but it's like piro, or it's like chatzer, or it's like meshicha, because it's already in your rishus. Another way to say this, differently, but within the same broad perspective, is to say, when do you need a kinyan? When you are transferring an object from one domain to another domain. The nature of mechila is such where you don't need to transfer, you just need to, again, relinquish the right of collection, or maybe even in certain cases, let's say if it applies to a ben, which we'll discuss in a moment, so what I need to do is I need to allow the object to remain in your domain, or to be perceived as being in your domain. In other words, I don't need, unlike a typical situation, to take the object which is my rishus and transfer it to your rishus. It's already in your rishus. Or maybe legally it isn't in your rishus because pikadon kalecha de isa rishus demara isa. So your possession is my embassy because the object is mine. But the second that I relinquish my rights to the object, if we're talking about an object, and especially if we're talking about a right of collection, like think like a milva lo tzanitna. So the money itself is yours, just that you have to pay me because you owe me, right? So since I don't need to transfer possession of a be'en, because either it's there when I drop my embassy claim, or if we're talking about a right, because there's no object to transfer, it's just, you know, giving up the right of collection. So since there's no new transfer of domain taking place, there's no need for a kinyan. That assumes that kinyanim are necessary to transfer domains, not to create rights. Because to create rights, there is a change here. Okay? So that is, some Rishonim say that too, Mechila in Tricha Kinyan, because there's no shiur, there's no remnant or leftover in my Rishus. Since I don't need to get it from my domain to your domain, right, there's no need for a kinyan. On the other hand, if that were true, right, so any time where there's no applicable chatzer, let's say, or where there is a shiur, shin yud vav resh, bekinyan, right, where there's some leftover vestige, then this wouldn't work. Oh. So, for example, what would happen if the object was in a neutral third-party place? Could I be mochel it to you? Right? If it's out of ben. Or, let's say, even we're talking about, not a ben, but a right of collection, let's say there's a shtar, let's say there is a chov, but there's a, or milva, but it's a milva b'shtar. Let's say there is a contract. And let's say I, the malva, which is typically what happens, am holding the contract. If I'm holding the contract, can I be mochel the chov? Well, you might say that, you know, there it's a little different because there's a shiur, or let's say a mashkon, right? Let's say, you know, I lent you money or whatever, right? And you gave me a pawn, to secure that that loan, right? So if I have in my possession a shtar or a pawn, right, how does that get back to where it's supposed to go? That might be a shiur, which requires some sort of a transfer, and maybe in those circumstances, the mechila would require a kenya. Ah, so is it a coincidence that that is a very basic debate? Even the Rishonim will hold the shiur, that Mechila ain't Sricha Kenyan. They debate, we'll see this next week, I guess, when we finish this, they debate what happens when there is an outstanding shtar. Rabbeinu Shmaya, quoted in the Tur in Simin Yud Beis, here in the Sugya, in the context of Pshar, where they talk about this issue, Yud Beis tests, Tur quotes Rabbeinu Shmaya, who disagrees with Rabbeinu Shmaya. The Mordechai on the spot here, we'll look at inside next week, and Rabbeinu Shmaya, says it doesn't matter if there's an outstanding shtar. It doesn't make a difference. If Mechila ain't Shricha Kenyan, Mechila ain't Shricha Kenyan. Okay? But Rabbeinu Shmaya says, not true, so we'll have to understand. They might be based on something else, as we'll get to in a second. Or a mashkon. The Mordechai here on our Gemara says it doesn't matter if there's a mashkon. If Mechila ain't Shricha Kenyan, Mechila ain't Shricha Kenyan. And Mimela, the mashkon, you know, belongs to the to the original owner, and Mimela the shtar, in the case of shtar, goes back or gets torn up. However, the Rabbeinu Shmaya and the Tur, as I just said, argues about shtar, and the Bala'i Tur disagrees, as does the Ritva, when it comes to a mashkon. They think that Mechila ain't Shricha Kenyan doesn't apply to a mashkon or and to a shtar. Yeah.
Does anyone say generally that Mechila requires Kenyan?
Yes, there are some Rishonim who prove from some of these things that Mechila ain't Shricha Kenyan. But the majority view in the Rishonim is like the Bali Tosas, that Mechila ain't Shricha Kenyan. And then the question is, do we distinguish between cases like Machkon and Shtar or not? This is all part, this first perspective, namely that it's about either whether there is a Kilus Kabalti or a Meshicha or a Chotzer. In other words, there is a Kenyan, it's just we don't see it. Or, let's call it 1A, 1B. You don't need a Kenyan because the purpose of a Kenyan is to transfer from one domain to another, and here it's already in the person's domain, so you just don't need the Kenyan. Right, so that, we'll call that 1B. These are perspectives which I've outlined. There is a number 2 as well. And that is the idea that why do you need a Kenyan in general? Maybe for reasons of Smich L'Stas. Meaning, in order to take seriously your level of commitment, you have to buttress it, you have to strengthen it, you have to reinforce it with a Kenyan. Okay? But, Lu Yitzuyar, right, if there was something that your very agreement kind of implied the seriousness of your commitment, right, then maybe you wouldn't require a Kenyan at all. Right? So some Rishonim explain, some Mefarshim explain, some Poskim explain that Mechila in Tzricha Kenyan is not based on the group or the cluster that I mentioned before. It's based on the idea that Mechila is an inherently greater commitment because you are giving up. You're not transferring, and it's a similar phenomenon, but it's a different explanation. Right? You're not initiating, right, the change or the new bylaws, you know, for an object. What you're doing is you are relinquishing a right that you have, right? And as such, it is inherent to, you don't do that frivolously, and you're only going to do that, you know, when you're very serious about it, because you're dropping a right. And therefore, since it's more serious, you don't need the added commitment, olimle, of a kinyan. That's a chiddush in understanding kinyan, just as the first perspective was a bit of a chiddush in understanding kinyan, right? First one was to transfer something from one domain to another, you need a kinyan. Here you're not transferring, it's already there. You're giving up on getting it back. Fine. This one is, in order to effect a serious change in status, right, you need a kinyan to establish your seriousness, your smichos das. Here, you're giving up on a right, and as such, it's inherently serious, and you don't need a separate kinyan. There are some mefarshim who explain that might be the pshat, another way to explain Rabbeinu Shmaya and the itur, namely that if you have a mashkin or a shtar chov, that affects this din, because they say, when it's if you're just giving up, it's one thing, but you know, when you hold on to the shtar, you're holding on to the machgon, maybe you're really not so completely serious about giving up your right. After all, you still have the security, you still have the means of collection. So that's their explanation of why there's a difference, you know, between, you know, these circumstances. So that would be, let's say, 1A, 1B, this would be number two. Number three is the following idea, and that is, the focus is, whenever you are transferring ownership over an object, no matter where it is, no matter how you know, inherently serious your commitment is, you always need a kid. However, what's unique about Mechila is that it's not about transferring an object or ownership. It's about relinquishing a right, and especially a right of collection. In other words, when I give you $100, right, as we just said, the milva is all its own, didn't it? The $100, even if it's still in your pocket, in the same crisp bills, we've talked about this many times, right, and we'll probably end up talking about it more times, is that that's what milva lahotzon itna means. The crisp $100 bills are irrelevant. It's basically you owe me, you know, at some point you've got to quid pro quo, you've got to give me back $100. But there's no be'en. There's a right of collection. Right? And because of that, mechila in shricha kenya. In other words, to transfer an object, to transfer ownership, to transfer title, for that I need a kenya. To relinquish a right of collection, that's qualitatively a different kind of an animal. That's a different kind of a transaction. That doesn't require a kenyan. Oh. If that's the case, can we still muster a defense? We can stop. I'm sorry, we're a little over time. Can we muster any kind of explanation for those who think that matters whether there's a shtar kenyan, right? Whether there's a shtar or a mashkon? Maybe on the following basis. And that is, maybe if there's a shtar, so you're not, it's not just about the relinquishing of a right. The fact that there is a shtar and you always had access to, you know, leaned property, mortgage property, to collect, or the fact that you always had a mashgan, right, which is kind of a security, right, that secures the loan, means that the loan wasn't just a right of collection. The loan, or the equivalent status of the loan, is secured in the nechasim mishubadim or in the mashkon. So then, basically, it isn't just a right that you've relinquished. It isn't a typical case of mechilas schus, right? It's a mechila of a be'en, or the equivalent of a be'en. And that you can't do without a kenya. Okay, so what I want to do next week is I want to you know, review these three perspectives of why Mechila and Shricha Kenyan. And particularly I want to speak a little more about the impact of Shtar, especially on this third category, Shtar and Mashkon. Does Shtar and Mashkon really establish a kind of you know, be'en status for what otherwise would have been just a schus, a right? That's what I want to discuss next week, these two ideas. Whether or not mechila applies to a pikadon or only to a kind of right like a milva. And then I want to discuss the end of Tosis, which is whether kinyan suda requires a dikiyum, because that also highlights, is this din of pshara tzricha kinyan, as we've been discussing, is it like Tosis says, just about the disbursement of the money? Or is it about the commitment to a process? And if so, then maybe when you make the kinyan, it's disconnection from mechila, but also whether or not it's dafka kinyan sudar that we're talking about in terms of shara, that would emerge, and that's something that we need to discuss. So we'll finish this whole tosis on these discussions, and then hopefully we'll move on to...